for the nice get-together last week. And we did the right thing moving here. Number one, this church has always liked verse-by-verse Bible study. And we can make a topical one, but like twice a year, Easter and Christmas is enough, and I wouldn't want to do it 52 weeks, so I like Westcliff for going verse by verse and not wanting topics all the time because it'd be the same thing over and over and over. Anyway, for like 40 years, we stayed here, also thinking Amarillo is a good place to raise kids. And I think there's lots of Christians here. Maybe not a lot of them study the Bible deeply, but lots of at least believers here. Also, this church, one thing it did was it wanted evangelism done even if the people lived out of town and would never become visitors or members. That is unusual. Because usually it's how many more people can come, and this church would let us do evangelism even though they're all over the country and they'll never be visitors. And there have been a lot of them all over the country. This will make me think of the Army today, even though I didn't do a directly military one. The material we're doing today was used by the military chaplains. Back in the Iraq War, I don't know whether to say how this happened, but over here in the Stan Coffee day, I got along pretty good with Stan Coffee. And we're having a big convention over here. Can I come to your convention? And Stan said, yes. You can put your church's books on my table. No, that's okay. We'll do our own table. So we made 10,000 books ready to go over here. And the National Convention would not let a Bible church come across the street. It wasn't Stan's problem. I didn't bother him with it. No, you can't come. So where this is going is we had 10,000 books. What am I going to do with these? I'll send them to the head of the military chaplains. And the head of the military chaplains wanted nearly all of them. So I do not know what all they did. They trained military chaplains somewhat on the stuff we're talking about today, which is really, really odd, but they want to know the difference between mental illness and demons. But that was military chaplain training as well as why does God allow suffering? So the books all went to Savannah, Georgia, and just as many as would have gone to the pastor's convention, they all went to the chaplains, and so even though it's not really directly military talk, it always makes me think of them. This material today was our way of helping them. So if you'll come with me to Matthew 17, and we have Jesus has come down off the Mount of Transfiguration, the metamorphosis, transfigured into glory. And he took the three apostles, not all 12, he took the three, Peter, James, and John, up with him. And they heard Moses and Elijah and saw them talking, and they talked about the departure. And the original word for departure is the Exodus. So maybe Peter got a little bit mixed up. He heard them talking about the Exodus, which was Jesus' Exodus in his ascension, going back to heaven. But he thinks about the Exodus. Well, they're talking about the Exodus. So Peter says, can we make three tents? And the book of Mark, giving Peter's memory, because he was very, very fearful, ex-phobia, beyond normal fear. So Jesus, Peter, James, and John come down off the mountain. The other apostles had been down below, and a father had asked them for help with his son, and the other nine that were down below could not do it. So we will get to Matthew 17, verses 14 and 15, are the father's appeal. The father wants help. Verses 14 and 15. When they came up to the crowd, a man came up to Jesus, falling on his knees before him and saying, "Lord, have mercy on my son, for he is a lunatic and very ill. He often falls into the fire and often into the water." The father came up to Jesus. He left the crowd. He'd been down there with the nine disciples who had not gone up on the mountain. He asked them for help. He asked Jesus for mercy. Mercy is feelings. Grace is action. Grace is doing something that they don't deserve, but mercy is feelings. Lord, feel some pity for us. This was his son. He will say son and he will say boy. Although I think he must have been old enough to be involved in some Satan worship. So maybe not all grown up, but not a child and old enough to be involved in some Satan worship. Well, translated in English, he is a lunatic. There is a relation between lunar and lunatic. It's kind of like moonstruck. The Greek word is selena, Spanish word for moon. He is moonstruck. He is mixed up. He was suicidal. He would run into the fire, run down the beach and jump into the water. These nine other ones could not help. Jesus will know what to do, but come help me because your disciples couldn't do anything about it. Mark chapter 9 gives another list of demon possession type characteristics. He could not talk. Mute is the way it's translated into English. He would be seized. He would be slamming into the ground. He would be grinding his teeth. So, been arguing with the scribes, and then Jesus comes and go talk with them, and now he talks about your disciples couldn't do anything, which we've already mentioned, but verses 16 through 18. I brought him to your learners. They could not cure him. Therapy. And Jesus answered and said, "You unbelieving and perverted generation, how long shall I be with you? How long shall I put up with you? Bring him here to me." Jesus rebuked him, and the demon came out of him, and the boy was cured at once. Mark is longer. If we just had Matthew alone, we would say, who's he calling perverted generation? Calling the crowds that? I think the Mark he's best calling the scribes that. The scribes who have been criticizing the disciples, the scribes probably criticizing the father. And so he's calling the scribes, I think, the unbelieving and perverted generation. There are going to be some in the crowds that do believe in Jesus as Savior, but the scribes were the ones that he's talking about. How long since childhood? The Bible does not give the age of accountability. I do think it's a true doctrine. It just doesn't give a number. There's lots of 12s in the Bible. So 12 or 13, old enough. A father might still call them a boy, but old enough. Mark 9:22 adds this, "If you can do anything, take pity on him." And Jesus said, if you can. So it's kind of like, if you can do anything, take pity on him. And Jesus said, all things can be done to him who has faith. And here's the answer. We're dealing with Mark 9, not so much Matthew, but Lord, I believe, help my unbelief. So, believe some, want to believe more. He's going to call his disciples people with little faith. There's little faith and there's greater faith. How much faith does it take to be saved? Well, just enough to get up in Jesus' arms. It's like we're drowning in a pool and we say, come over here, Jesus, and pick me out of the drowning situation. So a little faith in Jesus will say, but a greater faith is better. And same way with Christian living. And we probably go back and forth from month to month and year to year. Little faith, greater faith. So they couldn't do anything about it because he calls them little faith, which is coming. Now Jesus cast out the demon and the boy was cured, therapy, that hour. So we obviously will talk a little bit about the topic of demon possession. We could talk about having doubts. Let's do a little bit about having doubts and then more on demon possession. John the Baptist had doubts. Going back and forth, time to time. Are you the one or is another coming? Doubting Thomas had doubts. And I'm not going to believe until I can see his wounds. So there is such a thing as not having the strongest faith, little faith. We want more faith. Lord, I believe, help my unbelief, he said. The crowds were probably making fun of him and making fun of the disciples who could not do anything about it. That brings us to the topic of demon possession. One time, at among these many conventions, it was a secular convention on mental illness, but pastors sometimes float around them, and he told me that he had decided there's no such thing as demons. Kind of a liberal church. No, demons don't exist. Everything in the Bible is post-traumatic stress syndrome, PTSD. Demons don't really exist at all. Well, in all the Gospels, Jesus believed in demon possession. Case of it here, there were other cases where Jesus asked them, it's Mark 5 and Luke 8, what is your name? We are legion. We are many. Jesus cast them out. How many there are, I don't know for sure, but 2,000 pigs ran off the cliffs on the east side of the Sea of Galilee and fell into the water. Jesus believed in demons. I'm going to argue that I think demon possession is overdiagnosed in our time, that very often there's mental illness, but demon possession does exist. The best article on it I read in a pastor's journal was in South Carolina. There were 6 to 8 witnesses of what was going on. And it was a Presbyterian seminary there in South Carolina, and they said the building was dark and it was cold and they could smell things, but especially things were floating around. It was another boy. And I read that, and then eventually that church called here. And they said, we did see this. See, I put it in one of my books, and then they read it, and then they called her and said, yeah, we did see this. Demon possession, my philosophy as a younger person was to only study what the Bible says about it and not read all the other books that are out there. They're out there. But I had to read them in writing a dissertation, so I ended up reading as many as I could find. There are other cases of demon possession now. Fred Dickinson is the guy's name from Moody. That would be the closest to us. So if we ever want to read about cases of it, Fred Dickinson. John Warwick Montgomery is a conservative Lutheran, very good on apologetics, but he also wrote on demon possession. There are examples I do believe there are modern examples, do believe it happens, but I think I would argue that it's probably overdiagnosed. I think that there are churches even today that will say they're casting out demons and the person is not demon. There's nothing supernatural happening. A lot of times in our circles, in our times and in our cities, mentally ill people are said to be demon-possessed. If someone calls for help, I ask them two or three questions right away. Have you ever trusted in Jesus? Or close, has your relative you're talking about trusted in Jesus? Have you ever been involved in the occult? Or has your relative ever been involved in the occult? And then I ask them, is there anything supernatural occurrences happening? If the person says they have trusted in Jesus as Savior, I say it's not demon possession if you want nothing to do with Satan. Satan cannot involuntarily take over a Christian. The Christian cannot be seized. John chapter 6, if you know the truth shall set you free. And in the context, it's often freedom from Satan. James 4:7, submit to God, resist the devil, and he will flee from you. So a lot of people call and they get worried about demon possession, but have you trusted in Jesus? Yes, if they say, I say, it's probably not that. Have you any interest in the occult? And if they say no, it's probably not that. Anything supernatural happening? They'll say no. Just mixed up. Maybe even hearing voices and seeing things, but nothing supernatural like levitations and things floating around the room. No. Well, if you're a believer and you want nothing to do with the occult, and there's nothing supernatural, what you are hearing and seeing is most likely demon possession. Demons still pose a danger to those who are unsaved, to those who have an interest in worshiping Satan. But if they're believers and they have no interest in worshiping Satan, there's nothing supernatural going on, it is probably mental illness. I will go through briefly the contrasts. There are more in the books, but we don't need to do it in detail today. But interest in Jesus versus aversion to Jesus. Interest in Jesus versus aversion to Jesus. Demons want Jesus to go away. What do we have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High? That's Mark 5:7. Demons want nothing to do with Jesus. Mentally ill people often can want something to do with Jesus. I remember seeing my brother in a mental hospital, and I'm sitting at the table eating dinner with him, and then the word gets around, well, Mark's brother is a pastor. So all these people sit around, and they want to learn about Jesus, and they want to learn about Jesus' promises for their fears. So demon-possessed people want nothing to do with Jesus. Mentally ill often do. Another thought is in the Bible, those that were demon-possessed spoke in rational language, complete sentences, subject and predicate, like I just quoted. What do we have to do with you, Jesus, Son of the Most High? Complete. Well, if a person's mentally ill and they're off their medicine, it can just be what they call a word salad. I remember going up the elevator, off the subway in Washington, D.C., and here is this person standing there ranting this topic, that topic, all over the place. Nothing coherent, just all over, which I would define as mental illness. I would not look at them and say they're demon-possessed. the claim to be possessed. People who do this, they work in mental hospitals and they're Christians. And if a person claims to be demon-possessed, he most likely is not. People who are actually involved in the occult tend to be quiet about it. The effects of help. Schizophrenia can be improved by medicine. My brother is greatly improved. He's not altogether improved, but greatly improved. And of course, demon possession, not improved at all. So this list is in Strength for His People, and this list is in Life's Tough Questions, and it's gotten around. Help usually two or three times a week. And it's a holiday weekend, so I didn't know what to do. But here is DJ Jaffe, which I find fascinating. He's talking on Fox News, and he's talking about Donald Trump, and I think he gives Donald Trump advice. And then here is his website, and it quotes our books. And I remember him. He came to a convention. He says he has a mentally ill sister and he doesn't know what to do. And I said, come over here. We'll talk with you about that. Then the next year, his mom and dad came and I talked with them. Then over time, he put our material on the New York Alliance for the Mentally Ill website. And he put it on the Catholic Policy website. And there he is talking about Donald Trump. There's two or three indirect references to him, but I think probably this material on the differences between mental illness and demon possession did get around. That will do it for us. We can continue with Matthew 17. We're going to get to taxes. It's kind of a funny text. Lunatics and taxes. So we'll do Matthew 17, and he's down off the mountain, and now he's going further towards the lake, verses 22 and 23. And while they were gathering together in Galilee, Jesus said to them, the Son of Man is going to be delivered in the hands of men. They will kill him, and he will be raised on the third day, and they were deeply grieved. In our first sermon, we studied Psalm 16, said the Holy One will not undergo decay. In the Talmud, decay is day four. That's the way they thought it. Decay was day four. So he will not undergo decay, and Jesus kept saying he would be raised by the third day, and he repeated this over and over again. Next, verses 24 through 27, they're going to get back to Capernaum, back to the house, which is probably Peter's house in Capernaum, and the ruins are expected to be still there. But let's read about the taxes, Matthew 17, 24 through 27. When they came to Capernaum, down by the lake, those who collected the 2 drachma tax came to Peter and said, does your teacher not pay the 2 drachma tax? He said, yes. And when he came into the house, Jesus spoke to him first, saying, what do you think, Simon? From whom do the kings of the earth collect customs or poll tax? From their sons or from strangers? When Peter said, from strangers, Jesus said to him, then the sons are exempt. However, so that we do not offend them, trip them up, go to the sea and throw in a hook and take the first fish that comes up. When you open its mouth, you will find a coin. Take that and give it to them for you and me. This tax is a Jewish tax to repair the temple. The Romans gave taxes, and that's coming in Matthew 22, verse 17. Is it lawful to give taxes to Caesar or not? And Jesus said, show me the coin. Whose picture is on it? They said to Caesar's, give to Caesar that which is Caesar's and give to God that which is God. So eventually we'll get to the Roman taxes. This one, though, is a Jewish tax. 2 Chronicles 24, it started in the Old Testament kings, and they're doing a person-by-person tax in order to repair the temple. Nehemiah 10, 32, also to repair the temple. Now, a 4-drachma coin was really, really big. Must have been a big fish. Oh, I don't know. Silver dollar tie? That's big mouth of a big fish. Jesus said he would pay the temple tax. They usually did nets to fish in the Bible. This is throw in the hook. That part's unusual also. Great big coin, throw in the hook. And right away, caught it. Here's a big enough coin to pay taxes for both. Now, we're not going to do a sermon on pay taxes. It does teach that. 1 Peter 2:13, Titus 3:1, Romans 13:5, render to all what is due, taxes to whom taxes is due. Another application is don't give needless offense. 1 Corinthians 10:32, to the Jews, Greeks, or Church of God, he told Peter, we don't owe this. I am Lord of the temple. Why do I have to pay to build a temple that worships me? Don't really owe it, but okay, we'll go along in order not to offend them. So pay taxes, one lesson. Number two, do not needlessly offend. Sometimes do things you don't have to do to avoid troubles. But the close of Matthew 17 is very important for the authorship of the book of Matthew. The Gospel of Matthew is the most attacked gospel. If any one of them is said to be a forgery, liberals will call Matthew a forgery. But the Gospel of Matthew has special interest in tax collection. In the list of the apostles, I think there are 6 lists of apostles totally, but it's Matthew 10:3. Matthew the tax collector, King James the publican. Tax collectors in those days were nearly all criminals. They would auction off who will send us the most, and the Romans let them go to the highest bidder. Whatever more they could get, they could keep. So tax collectors were criminals. So why would you, in a list of the apostles, say Matthew the criminal? It's because Matthew is most likely the author of the Gospel of Matthew. He would go ahead and say Matthew was a sinner and Jesus saved him. The story of this fish and the story of this tax and the story of this great big coin, just here. Not in Mark, not in Luke, not in John, just here. So in the Gospel of Matthew, you have Matthew the tax collector, chapter 10. Then you have this story about collecting taxes in chapter 17. You also have in the Lord's Prayer, Luke says, forgive us our trespasses. Matthew 6:7, forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. So this story about the coin in the fish's mouth was of interest to a tax collector. And only here. Matthew is the most attacked gospel, and beyond that, there are the introductions according to Matthew, according to Mark, according to Luke, according to John. These are about as old as AD 100. And we have early church fathers that say Matthew wrote a study of the life of Jesus. Longer if you want to read it sometime, but Papias on Matthew. Papias, an early church father, likely knew the Apostle John and likely got his information on who the authors are from the Apostle John, and he is writing about AD 95 to AD 100, and at that time already Matthew is the author of Matthew. So there is quite a few bit of early external evidence for it, but also we keep having tax collection stories like this one here. So we have done demon possession. If you ever want to look more at that, it's in Life's Tough Questions. Or we can print out a little bit. Beyond demon possession, we have taxes. Pay the taxes. But this part helps with Matthew wrote Matthew. It is not a counterfeit. Next section will be on bring the children to me. So we can expect a children's message next week. The musicians, please come.